more or less a rule of thumb played service teams throughout the war, and I wonder if you recall any memorable games against service clubs.
We played Syracuse over at Sampson, and we played Boston.
Well, in this case, I'm talking about when you were with the Red Sox. And
oh, when we were going to play the different camps.
Right.
We went to Fort Dix, I remember, when I was with Boston. We went to Bainbridge, Maryland. We played the Naval Academy. We played at Army.
But one memorable game, at least for some people, namely those who had been in the Red Sox, Charlie Wagner, I think he started the game, and Don DiMaggio played in it, was a game he played against Norfolk Naval Station in 1943. I think the final score was Norfolk 4, Boston 3.
Gosh, I can't remember.
The winning run was set up on the old bunt and run play, which you don't see at all anymore.
Well, you know, I have a very bad memory for, you know, individual games pretty much, and I just don't recall it. They all run in together.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
During the war, were there any leather lungs who said, "Why aren't you out with a gun?" Or "Why aren't you in the service?"
I don't recall that sentiment too much. I think that most people felt that we were all subject to the draft, and whenever Uncle Sam deemed it wise to take us, he would take us. And those of us with families naturally lasted a little bit longer than some who didn't have families.
Mm-hmm. What were the circumstances of your induction? Where and when, and did you choose the Navy, or were you assigned to the Navy?
I was assigned to the Navy. I was drafted. My draft board let me know that I was going to be taken. And when I went through the induction center down at the Chelsea Naval Hospital, they stamped Navy on my papers, so I think I went in the Navy, fortunately, because I knew it would be a great, much better place to play baseball and do the duty than the Army. And then from there, we went to Sampson, and I played up at Sampson Naval Training Station in New York until being transferred to Colgate University in the Officers Training Program over there. So,
one month and year were you inducted?
I think I was inducted in around the 1st of March of 45, and stayed at Sampson until about, I'd say around, it must have been around June 15th, June 30th when I left there and went to Colgate.
Okay, Fred Strader was your manager at Sampson. What did you think of him?
Well, he was just a wonderful, grand guy. He was a dynamic man, basically a football man. He had worked at the St. Mary's and when they had good teams out on the coast. He liked baseball, but I think his first love was football. He was very loyal to the ball players and treated you as equals, although he was a commander and we were apprentice seamen, to make a difference to him. And all he expected was to win. And that's a nice way to operate.
What did you think of Sampson itself, the naval station, and what was your daily routine like?
The routine was very simple. We had very few duties except to play ball, and I enjoyed everybody I met up there. The people treated us fine. I think that Commander Strader impressed upon us that the best thing we could do was to entertain the troops, and that we tried to do, and tried to give them a laugh or two, and as well as try to give them some good baseball.
What were you doing besides playing ball? Did you have any recreational services?
No, I didn't have any duties. I'd swab the deck once in a while, and I didn't do anything.
Were the ball players housed in a separate barracks?
No, they just, you'd be in your regular company, and then they would advise that company that you weren't going to have any duties, that you would report to the ball club. And so in the morning, we'd get up and go up and have coffee with the commander. He had a nice little breakfast routine up there. And work out and play ball and have a few beers at the beer hall at night, and then have a steam bath and go to bed. If we wanted to eat with the firemen, we'd eat with the firemen, because they had a special mess around midnight. So I never did much of anything in the line of...
So you didn't go through regular basic training? You weren't taking regular courses there?
No.
Doing any marching?
No, I think we went to a couple of knot-tying classes. And had to march a little bit until baseball training started, and then we didn't do any of that. So it was a very pleasant experience. There wasn't much money involved, but it was a lot of fun.
Did the other recruits resent the fact that you were...
No, not particularly. Hey, Denzel Kit. I think a lot of them were glad to be around professional ball players and enjoyed our company more or less.
So you were strictly there for morale purposes?
I would say that was just about the size of it. We didn't do much in the line of regular Navy routine, I wouldn't say.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to mention some of the players that you were with. One in particular has interested me. Fred Gerken. Now, Gerken never made the majors. I think he played with Allentown in the Interstate League, but his record for 3 years at Sampson was really tremendous. I mean, he out-hit some of the major league ball players. Do you want to comment on Gerken?
Well, I thought Gerken was a fine-looking young ball player. He could run, and he could throw, and he could hit the ball. The fact that he never went to the big leagues is not unusual. In that period where so many men poured out of the service at the same time, a lot of people got lost in the shuffle. And certainly I've seen a lot worse ball players getting paid right now than Fred Gerken. He was a very acceptable, respectable ball player.
Tony Ravish, who played with you, told me that Gerken had a hair trigger temper, and that might have hurt him.
Yeah, he had a bad temper problem. There's no question about that. He was a little bit flighty and excitable and would get all upset. But I found him a very pleasant guy to be on a club with, and never had any trouble with him.
There was I forget how old he was, 18 or 19 year old, named Eddie Yost on that club.
Yeah.
Did you fellas who had been around for a while, who had been in the majors, realize that he was going to become the ball player that he eventually did become?
Yeah, I think everybody up there, the older ball players, respected him and tried to help him. I think if you talked to Eddie, he'd tell you that we would make suggestions to him, and he was a very personable guy, and everybody was glad to help him. And there was no question that he was going to make a fine ball player if the war ever got over, which it did.
Any comments on any of the other Sampson players that year?
Well, we had Chet Ross over there, who had been playing with the Braves from Buffalo.
Mickey Owen was your catcher?
Mickey Owen came after I left.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I missed him in the switches. Ravish, and I don't know who the other catcher was. Huck Gary, homesick Huck Gary, played shortstop for us. And
Walt Chipple was there.
Yeah.
Made the majors. George Fallon.
George Fallon wasn't there during my time.
How about Clem Drysworth?
No, Drysworth came after me.
Yeah. Jim Hickey or Walt Brown?
Yeah, Jim Hickey. Walt
Harry Brown. McPherson, he's been up
there,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Dick Carter, who was many years as a minor league manager.
Yeah, Dick and I, he managed Bradford when I had Jamestown later, and we used to see each other a lot. And Dick was a fine guy. He's dead, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jim Constanti?
Yeah, Jim was up there then. Yeah.
Tony Ravish has told me about this. You went to Jeddo, Pennsylvania, to play a club called the Jeddo All-Stars, and I understand from Tony that when Blasi played them twice that year, when you went into the town, they had welcome to the Sampson All-Stars or something like that, and that they treated you like royalty.
Well, no, I wasn't on that trip. That was after I left also. See, the summer was just getting into its own when I went over to Colgate, so I missed a lot of the real good times. Come in! They told me they had a real good time up there. A lot of those fellows. Hello! You know, having transferred over to Colgate, I missed a lot of those real good times that they had.
Now, would you tell me what you did last night? Would you relate those stories to me about how you happened to go to Colgate and how you were mustered out?
Well, one day I went up to have coffee with Red Strader, and he says, "I got some sad news for you." And I said, "What's that?" He says, "There's some first baseman broke his leg over in Guam, and they want a first baseman right now, and they've requested for you to go over there." And I said, "Geez, I don't want to go over there. I don't like the water and all that sailing and distance and all of that stuff. Can't we do a little bit better than that?" He said, "Well, I'm going to Washington to see Tom Hamilton." He said, "I'm going to ask him to commission you on the spot so that you can stay here on my staff and play ball and help me out and one thing or another." So he came back from Washington and he said, "Hamilton wouldn't buy it. There's no more of this. They won't allow that. The best I could do for you was to get you into the training for people who distinguish themselves in the fleet." And holy smokes, what is this? So he said, you're going over to Colgate. So we played a doubleheader against somebody, one of the professional clubs, and after the game, we had a big party in the clubhouse, and they assigned a wave to me, and she drove me over to Colgate in a station wagon, and we stopped along the way and had a beer or two and laughed. I got to Colgate, the guy who was on the watch is mad as hell. I said, what's wrong? He said, you were supposed to be here earlier. Colgate is going to play Army, and they wanted you to play first base for them, and now you're not there. So they were a little bit unhappy about that, and I played for Colgate then for a few games, and their season ended, and fortunately I got into the 16-week program instead of the 8, which they had originally scheduled me for, or I'd have been out of there. And during that period, the VJ Day came along, and the president of Colgate at that time had been a classmate of Forrestal's at Princeton. And he said he thought it would be a great idea if he just got in touch with Forrestal to expedite the matter and save the country a lot of money, to just put us all on an active duty. So we thought it was too good to be true, but sure enough, he called Forrestal, and Forrestal thought it was a great idea. And they put us on a train down to Long Island, to a place called Treasure Island, which was a disembarkation point or something. And the next thing I knew, I was out of the service, and I got on a train and went and joined the Phillies in Pittsburgh.
Really? Were your teammates happy to see you?
Oh, nobody cares much, you know. They didn't care a great deal. They were had trouble. They were short of personnel because they'd had some injuries, so I guess in that sense they were glad to see me, and I went and started to play.
They did very well in the final season.
I hadn't played a game of baseball for a long time. It had been, a couple of months. This was after Labor Day. And the first day we played a doubleheader with Pittsburgh right off the reel. And that's a little tough going after you haven't played. But soaking in the tub a little bit, and one way or another we survived it.
The three people who run that 45 Phillies club, and once again it wasn't a very good club, one of the worst in history as a matter of fact, but you rejoined Jimmy Fox.
He
was right at the end of the line. He was even pitching for the
Phillies. That's right. He pitched a game in Bridgeport. We played somebody in Bridgeport one day on an exhibition. And he pitched for us that day. That's the only time I'd ever seen him on the mound.
Tony, did he have anything to say? Did he know he was going to call it quits at the end of the year? Did he ever wax philosophical with
you
at any time?
No. No, and baseball was very kind to Jim in some ways later on in life. They gave him jobs as coach over at Minneapolis in one place or another. But Jimmy just, for one reason or another, just didn't seem to care a great deal.
Jake Powell, another character, was on that 45 Phillies club. Any stories about Jake?
No, I like Jake. I like Jake. Of course, I only saw him for a few, just the tail end in the fall there when I was there. But I liked Jake very much, and he was a good competitor. He was kind of a wild man, but he liked to play even then, even if he was not as good as he had been.
Hugh Mulcahy also came back at the end of that season.
Yeah.
He had been one of the Phillies' bellwethers, and he's the one who uttered the famous remark when he was inducted, the first regular to be inducted for World War II. In fact, he went into March of 41 before we were in the war. He said, the last time on a winning team.
Yeah.
And he had contracted dysentery in the Philippines and lost some weight, and he was never the same after the war. Did you talk with him at all?
Well, we rode on the train together and visited a little bit. He definitely was not as strong a man when he came out of the service. He was drawn. He didn't have the weight, and he never could throw as hard as he could throw before. He had a great sense of humor, and I think that Johnny Rigney, who had been with him in the service, took care of him over in Chicago afterwards. I think he had a couple of jobs for John. He's a nice fellow.
I've heard he was a real gentleman.
Oh,
everyone I've spoken to thinks very highly of him.
Hughie Mulcahy broke in the old Northeastern League from Manchester, and he was sold to the Phillies for $500.
Really?
Yeah, when that league blew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ben Chapman had succeeded Freddie Fitzsimmons as Phillies manager after the 45 season began. What did you think of Chapman as a manager?
Chapman just doesn't appeal to me. I didn't care for his style at all. He he just graded me the wrong way. I didn't care for him a bit.
Was he a rough, tough guy? Or he was
a yelling and screamer and complainer and moaner. I just didn't care for him as a manager. I didn't have much of a sample of him, but what I had him was enough. I wasn't very smitten with his idea about the game.
Where were you exactly on VJ Day, and what did you do that day?
On
did
VJ
you,
Day, I was in,
General merrymaking?
I was in Norwich, New York, at the place where they make... I guess Norwich Pharmaceutical was the name of it, and they make Angantine and all kinds of things. And for some reason, they had sent me up there to make a speech about something. And so, as we were there, after the speech was over, the host said, and whoever the man was who was president of the company, that the war was just over in Japan. And I don't know whether Red Streeter was with me or who. We had a gay time of it driving back to Colgate, and no, it wasn't Streeter then, it was somebody else. But by the time we got back to the college campus, the place was a bedlam, and it was well into the night, and I don't believe anybody slept for the rest of the night. It was just, and from then on, of course, there was no discipline or nothing. We just couldn't wait to get out of there. And
sure. That's one final, that's a final question. I'd like to ask you, what pitchers in the American League and the National League you were able to hit the best?
Of course, I was just an average journeyman ball player. Kid, I was never a great hitter. I don't know. I hit Newhouser pretty good for a left-hander. For a guy who was a star, I think I must have hit him pretty close to 330. I hit Lopat pretty good. I'm thinking of left-handers now. They are better than you should hit them. Of the right-handers, gosh, I don't know. I can't think offhand. I just had average success because I was not a great hitter.
Okay. Which ones did you have a lot of problems with?
Well, I had a lot of trouble with Chandler. I thought Chandler was the best right-hander I ever faced. From my point of view, he was the toughest.
Why?
Because he could break the ball two ways, and very few people I've ever seen could do that. He could throw the sinker, and he could throw the good curveball, which means you start guessing to go one way, and you're going to get hit the other way. And of course, he was a very experienced pitcher. He pitched in the minor leagues until he was 32 and 33 before he came to New York. And as I said, Ken Tobin gave me a hell of a time with that knuckleball, and the other knuckleballers did too. Niggling, Wolf,
Leonard.
You go to Washington and see three of those people, and that ball, if I couldn't catch it, how could you hit it?
Later on, they had Mickey
Haysner. Definitely, they had him over there too, but he'd been in Minneapolis when I was at Louisville years before, and I'd seen him somewhat. But he was a good little competitor and a good pitcher.
Other players who were in the American League when you were, say that Tommy Bridges probably had the best curveball in the American League.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. He had a great curveball, and he also could load the ball. He threw the spitball every once in a while and get you looking for the curve, and then buzz went up in here with good stuff on it that was hard to lay off. He was exceptionally tough for a left-hand hitter against a right-hand pitcher. And a lot of other people shared my dislike for him on the mound because he was great. And then he ended up in the Coast League when I played at Hollywood. He was with Portland in 47, he and Rashi. And at the end of the 47 season, one of the clubs was going to bring him back to pitch one game in Boston. I think it was the Yankees, because he at that time, Portland was a Yankee club, and Turner was running it, and he refused to come back. He says, I left the big leagues with good stuff, and I'm not going to go back if I haven't got the same stuff I had when I left, and he refused it.
Tony, is there anyone else you'd like to comment on, or anything about baseball during the war years that I haven't touched on?
Can't think offhand. I really think that the ball players, in spite of everything, have performed a great service for the entertainment of the troops. Excuse me, and the for morale factors. I think on the whole, the ball players behaved themselves pretty well and were dignified left the record in the service it could be proud of. I don't believe that some of the other professional sports could say that as well as baseball.
Really?
Yeah. A tremendous number of men were officers, as you know.
Right.
And I think the record as a whole of professional baseball men during the war years was a creditable one.
Fine.